As you know, I don't get involved in politics, and therefore I don't usually speak about our beloved president, Steve Feldman, Donald J. Trump. But unless someone's climbed out under a rock recently, you will note that we're having this issue with COVID-19, and the president and other members of the government have this ongoing discussion where whatever one says one thing, the other one just assumes that they're a blooming idiot. And it could be they're both right. The president has come forward and he has supported, at least earlier on, a anti-malarial drug called hydroxychloroquine, which is easier pronounced by its name of Plaquenil. This is a drug that's been used for over 50 years as a way of protecting people from malaria. And the president believed that, in fact, this would be something that would work well against COVID-19. There were medical doctors who supported the idea. And in the end, there were medical doctors that were against the idea. And then there were studies that said it didn't work at all. Then we saw that those studies were actually flawed. So in terms of medicine, in terms of politics, I have no idea what's going on. So if you came here for some help with either of those, I'm sorry. However, what I can help you with is as follows. If you, I gave you a little article here from the Washington Post, where the Washington Post mentions that this Plaquenil actually over the years has been used for many different types of diseases. And this is a little background. In the 1930s, the Bayer Company was testing it for using it as an anti-malarial. The problem was they were having a very hard time with the dosing, right? Don't give enough, it doesn't work. Give too much, it's harmful. So because they were having such a hard time with the dosing, there was a German scientist, Klaus Schilling. Klaus Schilling decided that the only way this would work out is by testing it on human subjects. Therefore, he went to Himmler and he got permission to try it out on prisoners in the Dachau camp. What he did was they took these inmates, they infected them with malaria, and then they gave them the pills and went to give, some got this dose, some got the other dose, no double blind or anything. And they went and they figured out based on that what the proper dosing would be. Klaus Schilling was tried at Nuremberg and Klaus Schilling was hanged for this, among other things. The question becomes, given that what we know about Plaquenil and the ability to use it effectively was based on studies that were clearly immoral, is there a reason why we should avoid using this type of medication? In order to discuss that, we start with the Gemara in Psachim. And the Gemara in Psachim says that basically you can use anything, in order to cure a person, you can use any type of medication you want. However, there are exceptions. The note is Atze Asherah. A tree that was used for Avodah Zarah, that cannot be used for that. So we see that there are limitations as to what type of medication you can use. But in the event that I have a medication that was somehow derived through idol worship, right? And if I don't give the medication, a person will die. Halachically, unfortunately, the person has to die. And therefore, obviously, if the medication was Avodah Zarah does not stand alone. Avodah Zarah is one of the three cardinal sins. And one could safely assume that any of the cardinal sins this would remain true for, including murder. If a medication was derived based on murder, one could make an argument that that too would be the type of thing which you would have to withhold. The Rambam in his Pirush HaMishnayos and Psachim talks a little bit about the Navi. We haven't gone to it. Yes.
Subsequently, other people had enough experience with it to otherwise independently verify its efficacy.
So yeah, that's hard to say what would have happened, but it's a good point nonetheless. I mean that in terms of practically, you'd have to figure out the case. But the question is, just because the first guy to get there did it immorally, right, does that in fact stop? So let's first figure out if the immoral, again, there's obviously there's a difference between these two cases. The case of the Asherah is I'm taking the Asherah tree, right?
Using it itself.
As opposed to knowledge, which we're talking about here, which I'm using, right? Which is something, right? The plaquenil is not being obtained through immoral means. Right? There are companies that are cranking it, whatever you think about pharmaceutical companies, right? They're cranking out these pills, right? And just the dosing, etc. In this case, that is where we're saying the problem lies. So the first source I'm just bringing out to show is it's in order to save a life, it's not anything goes. Similarly, the Gemara comments that Chizkiyahu HaMelech, Chizkiyahu was one of the great kings that we ever had in Jewish history, did six things, six radical moves he had. Three of them God was happy about, three of them the God was not happy about. One of the three things that God looked kindly upon, according to the Gemara, was he was gonez the Sefer Refuos. There was some medical book that he got rid of, and God said, good. Now, the Gemara doesn't let us in much on what exactly was the Sefer Refuos and what was so good that he got rid of it. So the Rambam basically says is that the Sefer Refuos was based on sort of Avodah Zarah. If you look at number two, look at the fourth line. He says, this was, for example, he said, the Surah Nikres B'Lashon Yavan Talisam, right? Or, as we said today in the Ghost, Talisman. Right, that there are certain supernatural, maybe, certain types of cures out there that a person should not partake in. The book was out there among the Jewish people to learn from, but not to actually use. People started using it, so he said, well, I'm going to get rid of it then. So again, according to the Rambam's approach here, the idea is that there are definitely some forms of cures that are better not used. In terms of the idea that how closely related does it have to be, Rav Yaakov Emden has an interesting question which would perhaps be parallel to our case. Rav Yaakov Emden wants to know that the local executioner who used to behead people, he decides to retire. You know, he had done his years, he in fact was entitled to a certain pension, and he was leaving the business. So he decided to hack whatever he had. Thank you. Thank you. You've been a great crowd. So, problems of salary cuts. So in fact, he decided that he was going to sell his knife. His knife that he used to kill people. The Shochet wanted to know if he could buy it and use it for Shlita. Right, it's a good knife. Shame to put it to waste. So that was his question. Is there something inappropriate in using that same knife for Shlita? So he says as follows, third paragraph. He says, Choshi shani bebasa shenisa besakin zeh. He says, I wonder if he used that knife to shecht an animal, whether the meat would be kosher. Why? Mishum iser hana, that perhaps you should not get any benefit from this knife. Shekei baruge bezin shol chachomim, saif shenero bo nikvarimo. In fact, when the bezin had to kill someone, they would bury the knife with the person that should never be used again. B'yichirim dunbo Yisrael. And so too, this person who wasn't following the rules of Beis Din, who killed Jews with this knife, for sure, this is not the type of knife you should be getting benefit from. But near Elisha Dino could then sacken some shamshe alilim. So this is equivalent to a knife which is used for Avodah Zarah. So Yaakov Emden is of the opinion that in fact there is a parallel case here, meaning that in the event a knife was used for immoral purposes, and then I use that knife to shecht an animal, there's nothing wrong in my action of shechting the animal. Right? The act of shechting the animal arguably is a mitzvah. But since the item that I'm using, right, it's like the shechita is based on was something that was used for immoral purposes, therefore, he suggests that the meat is actually not kosher. So the question is, right, can we apply the rules of the knife to the rules here of the data which came through the immoral experiments? Do you say just like a knife was used to kill people, now you can't use the knife for anything else? So too, information which was acquired by killing innocent people cannot be used later on, even if it's for a worthy cause. On the other hand, the Gemara makes a very clear statement that there's a difference between something that is tangible and something that is not tangible. Correct. So, Amar Rav Shimon ben Pazi says, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapara, Kol Umare V'Reach Ein Behem Mishum Me'ila. If we're talking about a sound or something that you look at or something you smell, that is not what we call Me'ila. What's Me'ila? Let's take a quick step backwards and explain that in the event, for example, I say this cow should be given as a sacrifice, I cannot get benefit from that cow. Now, what does it mean? Can I paint a picture of the cow? Yeah. Right? So again, the just to look at it, or to listen to it, or to smell it, or the like, that is not me'ila, right? That's not tangible, right? Even though I can't get benefit from it, that's not considered benefit. So too, the knife, if I can't get benefit from it, so I can't use it. But what does it mean to get benefit from knowledge? Right? One could make an argument that knowledge is that amorphous, non-tangible type of thing, which is similar to seeing, smelling, or hearing. And therefore, arguably, that's not the same. This idea of getting information in perhaps wrong ways was discussed probably earliest and most significantly on the topic of autopsies. Right? The question is whether or not a person can perform an autopsy to get information. And in the event autopsy was performed, could you use the information? We start with the Chasam Sofer, number 5. It says, Nisar me'alasso, amasha kosa benoda b'Yehuda tinyana, iyanti sham hine lecha v'havir motzi la'asa b'pshitos mitam meis Yisrael, asa b'hano min ha-Torah. He said, the simple understanding is that, no, you can't do an autopsy on a Jew. Why? Because you can't get benefit from that.
The only circumstance in which you can do an autopsy, I thought, is when there's another person standing right there who needs the information to be cured.
So again, that is that we hold that way. Halacha l'maaseh, you're right. Not everybody agrees with that. But in that case, let's take a step back earlier. Right? Let's say I'm doing an autopsy to teach a doctor anatomy. Right? So therefore, the student learns, the medical student, that, you know, you've read about it in the book, congratulations, here are the kishkes, right? Or whatever other body part is. Again, you're gaining knowledge from this body. Now, again, I understand you can't get hana from it. You can't use a dead body as a doorstop. Right? That's getting hana from the body. But the question is getting knowledge considered benefit? Or is it no? It's like me'ila. And we said, as far as the hektish, something that's holy, is concerned, that's not considered benefit. Here, would this be considered benefit?
Well, knowledge is benefit.
But it's not a tangible bill. Correct.
Right.
She says, so, you know, this is like anything else. You can't get benefit from a dead body. He said, but this is different. He says, where do I want to do an autopsy? Right? This is actually very much falls into our question regarding COVID. When COVID first hit, the doctors knew so little about it. And in fact, the proof being that so much of the advice has changed over the last few months. Right? We had mentioned over Shabbos the idea of using a ventilator. Right? When it first started, the doctors would believe that ventilators were the key to fixing everything. And now we see that, no, in fact, ventilators perhaps should be avoided. Because the more they get to know about the disease, the more they can get a general feeling as to what's good and what's not good. And one of the ways to do that is to find out, well, what exactly is going on inside the body in a case of COVID. And looking inside the body is one way of figuring it out, right? COVID is, as a disease, is very different than anything we saw, right? They talk about people walking in to emergency rooms and they're talking normally and they sound normal. Then you check their oxygen saturation level and this guy should not be doing this. So what's going on? So the question is, can we get the benefit of looking inside afterwards to get an idea as to how exactly the virus is affecting the body, and therefore, what can we do to stop the virus in other cases? We didn't say anything like that. That we did not say at all. But for example, right? So what can we do? What can you do to avoid it? What type of medication might be helpful in the case like this? So it was the Nodi Behuda who famously said, unless there's another patient I could point to that this would save, you can't do it. He said, but, as Yitzhak just said before, if there was another case before us, right, it sounds like Nabi Yehuda, of course you could do an autopsy in that case. What if a person wants to donate his body to science? I'm alive, I'm healthy, I realize this is something that's not going to last forever. Right? Dr. Spivak from Denver was a case of this. The person says that I want to help out, I want to donate my body to science. So this isn't really pikuach nefesh. You can't do whatever you want. You can't just say, oh, in order for me to learn a little more and more, I can violate Shabbos, you know, to go online and find articles so I can become a better doctor because maybe it'll save a life. Chasam Sofer says, too far removed. Vayim b'sheros yayvitz. He says it's inappropriate that a person should donate their body to science. So what's his assumption here? The assumption that he's making here is that there is a problem getting knowledge out of a body. Not everybody agreed with this. If you look at the Maharam Shik in his tshuva regarding autopsies, Hinei b'shomer tziyam mechta v'shikim mehevi raso rahapin nefel b'samin kadei lilmo b'menu chachmas hanitach. So what they used to do is they would preserve, it sounds like they would take stillborn children and put them in formaldehyde in order that they could use it to practice surgery. So he gives two reasons why you're not allowed to use it. So the person said, "What hana? What do you mean you're getting benefit out of it? This is benefit?" So the Maharam Sheikh says, "Yeah, it is benefit. You know why it is benefit? It's benefit because knowledge is benefit. And you can't get knowledge from Isser Hano either. Right? Maybe you can tell me that smell is not benefit. Looking is not benefit. Right? Hearing is not benefit. But knowledge is benefit." Then he kind of hedges his bets a little. He says, because if not, you'd have to buy a book. So it saves you a few bucks on it. But I don't think that's the real answer. The answer is that the assumption here is that knowledge is a benefit. The Machna Chaim points out, he says, let me just say, he's probably, I'll go, he said that the Chasim Sofer asked a question on the, I don't know. Rofim Chotku me Ish Yisrael Evan Mikis Rachman Ratzonu Meis B'yadav Ratzal Yavtech Hasakis Lestakav Uvkom Shul Yros B'mofe Shorish Hamaka. The person seems they had some sort of a gallstone. Person died for it. Now they want to see what and they want to do surgery to see what exactly happened. L'Islami L'das Ech Yechatku Ba'osim Yavo Rifnei Mimutu L'Navo So now they want to do it. Then the next surgery should go better. So he said, "He's probably Adoni Mori Verabi Tepik." Once he said, "Talmud of the Chasam Sofer, the Meisis Ro also Bano the Tepik with Doich Rav Hachim Milcha No Bihuda Dain Ain Pekor Nefesh Refaneinu Vadaiti Rechadish Dov Vade Rika Chet Men Abaser." So he says, "I don't agree with this whole thing." He says, to take from the, let's say, you know, I want to take a cornea from a dead body and implant it in somebody else. Okay, I understand that's getting benefit from a dead body because there's a part of it that I'm getting a benefit from. Says, "I don't get it. He's not taking a piece of the body and getting a benefit from it. He's just looking at it. He's learning from it. That's not considered benefit." So therefore, this opinion of the Machne Chaim, the student of the Chasam Sofer, is clearly that no, knowledge is not considered a benefit. His son was the Chas, it was the Ksav Sofer, his grandson.
Says Chaim Sofer, also known
as the Machna Chaim, which was the name of his
responsor.
Years? 1821 to 1886. Grandchild? Sounds like. So we have here a basic disagreement, right? We, on the one hand, we have the opinion of the Yavetz, Yaakov Emden. Rav Yaakov Emden said, you can't get benefit for somebody who's wrongfully killed. And based on that, right, that was the case of the Shechita knife. You can't use it. The question is knowledge considered benefit? It would seem, based on the Maharam Shik, etc., the Chasam Sofer, that knowledge is considered benefit. And if there's something you cannot get benefit from, you cannot get knowledge from it, as opposed to the Machne Chaim, who says, no, benefit is something tangible. This is not tangible. It's interesting because there seems to be a handful of cases in the Gemara where people did get benefit from dead bodies. We start with the Gemara in Bechoros. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Maisa b'Talmid Shom Rabbi Shmuel, Sheshalku Zona Echad Sheneschayv V'Sreif V'Melech, Bak Mazu Bav Masayim V'Chamishim V'Shtayim. There was a question as to how many limbs there are in a body. So the students of Rabbi Shmuel got their hands on a woman who was put to death, and they were able to deter count that she had 252 limbs. I never took anatomy.
Well, they're not limbs.
What?
They're not limbs.
What? Avarim. Echvasnish. Doctor, would you?
I don't know. I mean, we talk about Ramache Dorim Shasagi.
Right. I don't know what either of those mean.
I don't know what that means.
Right. Me neither. But again, this is the argument. They said it wasn't Ramach. She had four more. But that's what the Gemara is talking about. She had Ranab. Right. So, but that's not what I'm concerned about. What I'm concerned about right now is I'm concerned about the fact that they took a dead body and they did a study on it, and it is quoted in the Gemara, and no one says boo against it. Right? So similarly, you have Abba Shaul says that he used to be a grave digger. He did for a living. Tanya, Abba Shaul, Omer, Kover, Mesim, Ayisi. I used to bury people. Rod Stewart also did that, I believe. But Yisi Mistaka Ba'atzmo Shel Mason. And then I look at the bodies of the people that are dying. Hashosa Yayin Chai Atzmo Srufim. If he drank wine that he did not dilute first, body looked one way. Mazik was diluted Atzmosev Sechuyim. Kiroi Atzmosev Meshuchim. He goes to the whole list that based on a person's drinking habits, it had an effect on the body. You could see after they died. If you drink more than you eat, this is one thing. If you eat more than you drink, that he was able to look at the dead bodies, and we get these insights in how much a person should eat, how much a person should drink, and what a person should drink. Again, the point of bringing down this Gemara is to indicate that you do seem to see that people were using bodies as a conduit for getting information, and the Gemara is not bothered by it. One more, Gemara Nida, Maisa b'Cleopatra, Malchus Alexandrus, Cleopatra, the queen of Alexandria, So they were pregnant, these people that she put to death, and she checked their embryos, which were 41 days in, and they were figuring out, you know, boys, girls, how they had developed. And again, the Gemara goes through an entire discussion about it, back and forth. No one's that bothered by the fact that the studies were done on dead bodies. So the bottom line is that, if anything, the indication here is that in fact, a person could use the knowledge that was retrieved from a dead body, even if it was wrong to retrieve the knowledge. There's a very interesting few psukim in Shmuel Beis. We'll get to Shmuel Beis. Where David HaMelech, towards the end of the book, is in the middle of fighting against the Plishtim. He does that at the beginning of the book, the middle of the book, end of the book. It says, Vayedu shoshas mehasharishim rosh vayaviyu al katsir al David al maras adulam v'chayas Plishtim v'chanu v'imach refayim. So, the Plishtim were in Emek Rephaim, probably eating dinner there, something nice, one of the restaurants, and David is in Adulam. But David was in Metzuda of Matzah, Plishtim was in Beis Lechem. So David is in one place. The Plishtim, in fact, have gotten Bethlehem under their control. Now David makes this strange kind of comment. But Yisabe David, David says, you know what I could really go for right now? Nice cold glass of water from that well in Bethlehem. Now Bethlehem, of course, is being held by the enemy. Three of his great warriors cut across to enemy lines, and they heroically bring him a cup of water. David refuses to drink it, and instead he pours it. Pours it to Hashem. He said, this isn't water. These are blood of the people who went there. I will not drink it. And he pours it away. What in the world was going on here? So if you look at Matutas David, he says, Vayasech shafchem arza l'shem Hashem. He poured it on the floor for the sake of God, because he thought it was the right thing to do. Vayomer, not sometimes. Let me explain to you why I'm doing this. So this would be wrong for me to drink it. What are you, crazy? You put your life in danger for a cup of water? I'm not going to support this. If I went and I drank it, you'd do it again. And therefore, he spilled it out. What's the indication? That this water, which was gotten, I wouldn't call it immoral, but under incorrect reasoning, he said, I will not get any benefit from this. According to that reading of the Navi, that seems to be similar to our case. What happened, happened. It shouldn't have happened. So what do we do now? So David says, we show that we don't approve of this, and therefore we don't get any benefit from it. So according to that, which I think is the simple reading of the Navi, then of course, it would seem that that would be a source which would say, no, you don't get any benefit of this. No.
This wasn't going to be a life-saving benefit. So we cannot extrapolate from that event that a life-saving benefit should be.
Right. So you're saying in a perfect world, he did the right thing. But if someone's life is on the line,
right.
Correct. The Malbim reads the Navi totally differently. Malbim Kosi Abarbanel, Kosov. He said that when you do something that has great value, you don't want to cheapen it. Meaning as follows, he said, these people put their life on the line in order to do the ruts on the will of the king of Israel. If all what he got out of this was a good tall cup of water, that would have been a waste. There was such mesiras nefesh on behalf of these people, and now what he's going to do is drink the water? That'd be terrible. Therefore, he says, this deserves more than me drinking it. And when it says, Vayasech, you get the words right there. He says, Vayasech Osam Hashem. He poured it for the sake of Hashem, means he went and he poured it on the Mizbeach. He said, this is such a great act that is worthy to be given to God. This is the exact opposite of the Metsudos. But he's saying is that what these people did was such a wonderful act that I want to support it more.
So, I think the context supports the all they did was pour them on the ground. What it was.
So look at the mitzudos. Mitzudos deals with that. Shafram arzo l'shem Hashem. He poured on the floor because this was the sake of God. This was the right thing to do. So, obviously, according to the Malbim, it's irrelevant to our discussion. If you look at the Yerushalmi sounds a lot more like the Malbim than the Mitzudas. He, in fact, indicates that it actually was a carbon, which, again, does seem to be more like the Malbim's reading. Okay, these are the background sources. Bottom line, what do modern-day poskim say about this type of thing? We start with the Shut HaShvit. The Shvit was... Rav Shmuel Tuvia Stern. Who was Rav Tuvia Stern? So he was a rabbi in Miami. Wrote many svarim, and he also was the Rav Machshir on Hebrew National. Just as an FYI. Even though this is in his tshuva sefer, it's not his tshuva. It's a tshuva to him, written by Rav Menashe Klein. So this is a response to him. Who writes as follows? Hine pashit dafilu stam meis aser bahana. He said that we obviously don't get any benefit from dead people. But kol shekein hani kadosh elyon ha'am nam achshav nafshav b'sheil sova hani rishom ha'natim shasul kol minei nisyonos experimentin mefi datam anid fosos omrim shemotu eze trufos refu shiotsu mehem ha'idein sos ha'ohu imutar ishtamish behem. A general dead person, I don't want to get benefit from. Kal v'chomer ben benosho, kal v'chomer, I do not want to get benefit from a Jew that was killed by the Nazis. Yishom she'ad rabbi, yiv ezek kovet v'ilu ha'amesim. Some people say, what do you mean? Let their death not be for nothing. Let something be a positive come out of this. But he said that you are still certain with Shmuel Tuvia Stern. You say, what do you mean? That'd be a terrible. It wouldn't be good. Something good should come out of it. No, nothing good should come out of the Holocaust. Nothing good that happened. So he said, Shmuel Tuvia Stern, you are totally opposed to this. In fact, if you want to know what he's responding to, interestingly, Rav Shmuel Tuvia Stern wrote it in Hapardes. So he put down his number 17 here. We'll get to that afterwards. But he said, well, clearly he is of the opinion, no way. I think you're right. So if you want to be technical about this, you're not getting benefit from dead people. You're getting benefit from people that were alive when this started. This killed them. But the benefit comes from when they were alive. You take a living person, you give them a certain amount of a drug, they die. You're not getting benefit from the dead person, you're getting benefit from the live person.
The one who makes it, we're getting benefit from them.
No, I mean, even the knowledge, you're getting from living people. You took 100 living people, 50 of them got this, 50% of them got that, some live, some die. When you gave them the medication, which is when we're looking at, they were living people. You're not getting benefit, you're not doing something to a dead person. So his argument is that if you want to deal with technical halacha, yes, you can't get benefit from dead people, but these weren't dead people at the time when this happened. The proper makom bikuach nefesh. He said, it's also 50 years later. It's a lot of water under the bridge. You can't say forever we're not going to take this information. Because as Yitzhak said, it's not a bad bet that this would have come out eventually. It would have come up with the same information through more moral means. He says, why can't I kill a person in order to save my life? And the reason is because who said my wife is more valuable than that person's life? But that's not the case here. Unfortunately, the people we're talking about are gone already. So he says at the bottom line is that if a person wants to turn around and say, I'd like to use this medication to save my life, he says it's hard to argue against the person who makes that argument, which is basically a nice way of saying, I'm not convinced you're right. Yes, the Holocaust was terrible. Yes, there's nothing good. Yes, this is not a Kiddush Hashem. But doesn't mean that more people should die because we're turning a blind eye on information that we probably would have had anyhow.
Can't we say that it's honoring their death? I mean,
so he rejects that. I also happen to reject it as well. Again, we're not honoring the people that were killed. We're actually honoring the Nazis who did this research.
I don't know that that's the right word. Remembering, putting our consciousness at...
I can't believe that people, everyone who takes Plaquenil is thinking about you know, I'll be honest, I've known about Plaquenil, I'd say for 20 years, as an anti-malarial, as something that people take for lupus and whatever else. I'm very familiar with it. I was familiar with the drug when it was raised for COVID. And up until a few weeks ago, I had no idea that there was any connection to the Holocaust.
Right.
You know, now that I'm part of the small minority of people who know this,
right?
Still, I don't think this is that you know. Again, I thankfully don't have to take Plaquenil. I'm not planning on taking Plaquenil. The Edo's board didn't tell me I had to take Plaquenil in order to be able to come back for Rosh Hashanah. Right, that was a 6-3 vote. but you know. I don't see it. No, I don't see it as somehow honoring their memory. I happen to agree with that point. I don't see it as not. Yes?
What about the concept of proportion? Because if X many people died, which, well, it's terrible, but the results of that have saved millions.
No. Again, that's, again, your argument, the idea that, you know, okay, if X died, but 10 times X, 100 times X will be saved, I would never, ever, ever allow us to do that. I mean, we have a COVID vaccine. The quicker it gets out, the more lives will be saved, right? So if we would just go and infect a certain amount of people with COVID and then give them, some of them get the Moderna vaccine beforehand and some of them get the Pfizer vaccine beforehand, and the lucky few get the Russian, maybe exist, doesn't exist vaccine, or what have you, that, you know, and some people get Plaquenil and some people have to drink Clorox, whatever, however we're gonna work out who's going to get to do what, right? And whatever, you know, a few people will die from it, but how many more people will be saved? I don't think I would support that. But you're saying now post-mortem, right? So no. I think that we don't play games. We don't count numbers. So, but his argument, now it's very interesting. I left in the end of this because Menashe Klein, now of blessed memory, he says, I'm allowing this, but don't think for a moment it's because I don't appreciate how terrible this is. So he says, two lines from the bottom. Ani ha-gever, Rabbi Einai, Avatius Kolatzeros, Birkenau, Auschwitz, Monowitz, Galowitz, Buchenwald. I went through these five concentration camps myself. I was in Auschwitz. I was in Buchenwald. I was in Birkenau.
What number is this?
15. We have number 15?
Yeah.
Good. We're there? Okay. We're on the same page, literally, figuratively. Yes, good. He said, trust me. You know, you're not gonna paint me as someone who's light on Nazis. I went through five camps myself. May al chalaleim. We know where that's from. Vaday lo shanu. He said, it's not that I don't care. I just happened to think from a technical halachic point, you were in fact allowed to take advantage of this medication, you know, despite the fact that it might be morally repugnant. He comes out and he says, listen, I understand where you're coming from. I understand your arguments. I just don't think it's right. Very strong. He says, and you know, I have a right to say this. Interestingly, what he's responding to is Rav Tovia Stern's article in Hapardes. Hapardes, I was able to see this online. I wasn't able to actually get my hands on the actual volume. We don't have it in the Edel's library. Hapardes is a Torah journal that I think came out. I don't know if it comes out anymore, but I think it was four times a year, a quarterly journal that came out, where people wrote articles of great interest. It was a wonderful journal. And there was a series of at least two that I was able to find, two pieces that were written in this volume on this topic. And this was the early 80s. I'm not sure what medication they were. It's interesting. I wasn't sure what medication that they were referring to. I was familiar with some of the Nazi research, right? Some of the Nazi research was absolute garbage. Nothing was ever written up about it. All the twins research, etc. Just sadism, disgusting. There's nothing to be gained, right? The question, however, is I'm familiar of the hypothermia research, right? Where they, and that's an argument whether there's what to be gained. The person who did it, Rascher, who was the head of these things, was such an immoral person. I don't know if people are familiar with what became of him. So he became friendly with Himmler. Himmler was giving over all of these inmates for him to do his studies on. And at one point, he said that he had developed a sort of fertility medication that allowed women to give birth way beyond their normal ages. And in fact, his wife, he showed, had had three children since she was 46, and she was expecting her fourth. And this actually made its way into Nazi propaganda, where they featured the Frau Dr. Rascher and her lovely brood of children, until they found out that he in fact had kidnapped these children. She had never had any pregnancies to go with these births. And he was, there was absolutely no medical science behind this whatsoever. They also found out that he had been embezzling money. And fascinatingly, what they decided to do is they threw him into Dachau. They threw him into a concentration camp, and eventually they just shot him. So that's the person that was running these studies. So one would have to forget the Nazi issue, right? How could you trust anything this guy ever said, right? You would imagine that if Lance had ever published it, they'd be retracting, they'd be embarrassed, and Queen quite embarrassed. So I was familiar with that thing. I didn't know that there was any medication that was actually developed. And I couldn't figure out, what are they talking about here? Can you take the medication? Right? Originally, I thought, you know, you think, oh, that's probably in the 1940s, 50s, this is a theoretical. But how did it suddenly creep up again in the 80s? Why are we having a series of articles? So when I actually tried to find out, that's when I stumbled upon the placental information. That's why I found, but only through reading these tshuvas and wondering, what are they talking about? I don't even know if that's what they're talking about. I don't know. I don't know. And the one medication that I was able to find was this guy Schilling, who I accidentally always call Kurt, and his plaquenil dosing. Again, it's not that he didn't discover it, right? Quinine had been around for a long time beforehand, and the idea of using it for malaria also wasn't his idea. But this was the idea, is that he used the inmates in order to work out the dosing. So in there, they have the back and forth articles. So he says, he named Anita, and the first article is a fellow, Rabbi Meir, Abba Meir Israel, Terufa shal mechre ha-natsim yimach shumam, Nila Anita lishtamish pa-osam chuv shenim tzor yidei chokreyim shal osam ha-rotskim ha-rim ha-guf ha-seyim atzvam besarim. Bedama Naki, etc. Asar Arivavos Achinu Bnei Yisrael Kedoshim VaTorim. So he said, Kederach Sheosim B'Mavol Shel Tshuvos VaAchbarim. He said they were using this as lab rats. Kamo Shemir Kolzei Arofe Yehudi Doctor Nud Nisli Meir Grossvardim B'Sifrom. So he said, Zer Rosh HaMenateach B'Mavod Also Shel Doctor Mengele. This guy actually worked for Doctor Mengele. Auschwitz. He goes through what they did, etc. So he says, let's skip down because it's getting a little later. Said, after explaining exactly what happened, he says, unfortunately, now we've got to look at it through the lens of halacha and determine whether this is something that's allowed or not. He said, so I've heard that there are a lot of people out there that are in fact allowing it at this point based on technical halachic points. Like we said, Rabbi Menashe Klein, yes, it's not getting hanah from a dead person, you're getting hanah actually from a live person. Or maybe you can't, but since you can assume the knowledge would have come from elsewhere. He said, He said, let's say I want to use the gas containers that they used to drop into the gas chambers. Let's say I want to take them and make them into a menorah. Right? What a strong statement that would be. He said, of course he can't. You can't get any benefit from that. So it's like, you know, the what you use to kill a person with. He said, there's a different reason I think it's wrong. He said that there is a certain level of danger getting involved in this type of thing. He said, getting benefit from something that was used to kill fellow Jews, very dangerous. Now, what does that mean, it's dangerous? That's what I'm not sure about. Does it mean that there's some sort of metaphysical danger? That the soul of the departed will come down and curse you? Or is there a physical danger? Meaning that if I stand up there and I say, you know what? It's terrible what they did. But now that they did it, let's get some benefit from it. If this comes up again, are people going to say, all right, they'll yell, they'll scream, at the end of the day, they'll use my product. Is this perhaps a public policy argument? That if in fact we do use it at the end of the day, if we say, okay, they shouldn't have done it, but Farfallen, right? If that would be the case, then of course you're going to end up, if God forbid this should happen again, you're going to be putting people into more danger.
Well, that's sort of how I read it. When you said danger before you gave that explanation, sort of like, well, it becomes a slippery slope. If you could do it then you might consider doing it.
Right. You know, obviously it's wrong, and I wouldn't approve of this, right? But if somehow or another, right, you were able to, if China would start testing their vaccine on prisoners, right, or removing organs from prisoners and offering them for sale, you'll say, poo-poo, this is a terrible thing to do, but I'll take two of those, please, thank you. Right? So again, it's not clear what the argument is. It could be it's a metaphysical argument that we need to avoid this type of thing because, you know, for the sake of the soul. Or it could be an argument of, you know, of the slippery slope that we cannot permit it. We'll just end off with the last paragraph of Stern's actual piece, which, as I said, was in Hapardes. It was not actually in his Sefer. The response was published in the Sefer. He said, anybody who's going to turn around and say that, in fact, you know, something good should happen of it, it'll be a Kiddush Hashem, that every person who is saved now will be because of these people who gave their life from it, so that person should just jump in a lake. When Shaul went around, he was supposed to kill Amalek. He said, yeah, but it'd be such a waste. Let's at least get some benefit out of the sheep. We can make some karbanos out of it. How did that turn out? Something good should come out of Amalek. He said, that in fact was the end of it for Shaul. He said, so to anybody who says that we should go up and something good should come out of the Nazis, it's like Shaul Amalek, it's a terrible mistake. My opinion on the matter is that I think that, at least in the case of Plaquenil, it's far removed. It's terrible what happened, but it's the dosing. It's not the discovery of the medication. The dosing, I think it's a very strong argument that in the last 80 years they would have figured it out, right? And therefore, to say that this was directly related to it and therefore we should avoid it, I would think in this case it's not relevant. I think that, you know, it might not be a bad thing if more people knew about this and more people really understood this, you know, particularly, you know, there's this major discussion going on about Plaquenil, whether yes, whether no, you know, Democrats, Republicans, this doctor, that doctor. Not everybody's convinced one way or the other. But that this is probably a learning opportunity that people should understand that, you know, even if Plaquenil is not the answer to COVID, it is the answer to malaria, and it is an answer to lupus, right? And it is an important thing. And, you know, unfortunately, many Jews gave their lives. Non-Jews also, by the way, were given. It wasn't just the Jewish prisoners. And perhaps we could use this as a learning opportunity, and that would be a good thing. But in terms of can you take it, I think yes, you can.
So, yes. Parallel, and I don't know enough about this, and I don't know if you do. Sort of like the black soldiers that were used for.
Yes, the Tuskegee Airmen. Yes. So again, I would think that, you know, I would think the same thing. I think that was the syphilis studies, right? Right, and there have been many. Unfortunately, unfortunately, there's more than a few examples, even the great country of America, that we can point to.
So we get knowledge from that.
We
get benefit from that. Is what I'm trying to not say, but we do.
Right, and the argument being that it's indirect benefit. Again, I don't think there's, right, it's like there was no medication that was ever develop through any of these things. Right? I think this was...
The Tuskegee Airmen know in the Willowbrook experiments was with a vaccine, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it? To develop the hepatitis B vaccine?
Right, but I... Yeah, I don't think that there is a direct correlation between them. Not a doctor, don't even play one on TV. So, but it would be, yeah, one could make an argument that it's the same idea.